All right. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another amazing Wednesday night Vibrant. I'm super excited for this one. Been looking forward to it for, since I had the idea, and even more so at the point where our honored guest tonight was, willing and able to come on and talk to us. So first of all, I got to give a shout out to some of the people in the chat. I see Silly Bear, Braden, Kabir. I love you folks. Especially happy to hear about Kabir having a session with our friend Kyle Denton at Tippecanoe Herbs today. That sounds powerful. Been meaning to hit him up and ask him if we can like trade services, because I would really like to experience a session with him on the receiving end. But tonight we are going to be talking to Lord Bear 33, aka Matthew Hutchinson. Matthew is quite an amazing young man. Like, for all the amount of things he's already accomplished and the progress he's made and his like maturity for, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but you don't look very old.
22. Yeah. The beard helps a lot, I'm not going to lie.
22. It really blows my mind. Matthew is somebody who has, as they say, reverted to Islam. And I think that gives him a really unique perspective on, maybe the misconceptions that people in the West have about that particular religion. And I think it should go without saying, but this stream is not about trying to get people to, become religious in a way that they're not or anything like that. We're just here to find out, think of it as MMA or something. We're here to find out what are the really good tenets and philosophies, things that anybody ought to consider integrating that wants to live an upright and moral life and be connected to their creator. And I think many of the concepts of any religion that are useful and good would transcend a particular social group or, set of other beliefs or mythologies. So I think this is going to be a really interesting one. I've been curious about it as somebody that doesn't know a lot about Islam in general, other than, my first introduction to it as a 12-year-old when 9/11 happens and they tell us they're all terrorists. You gotta go over there and kick their ass. So, that should make everyone suspicious for sure. This is good times, though. I'm really happy to have you here, Matthew. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this one. I'm not going to lie. There was a saying, again, it was Topher. I've been on a Topher Big Bear Bender for the past month. Anytime I get free time, I'm watching their old streams. So it was a lot of the vernacular that is coming to my head is from what they say. But Topher had a really good quote, which was that when something arises and it has a lot of charisma and then it gets a lot of attention and it kind of becomes commercialized and loses that charisma. And the reason I've been like, because all the streams that I've been doing sometimes on my large audience so quickly, and even me, which is interesting because I've never had this sort of inner attention towards acting this way, but I found myself kind of censoring and not speaking what I want to really talk about. So to go on to somebody else's podcast like you guys, because I've been watching some of your stuff for a long time, it's just great. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be very enjoyable. But yeah, I think myself personally, I think everyone says they have an interesting life. It's kind of like when every dad is like, yeah, my son's the best footballer around. He's like, every dad thinks their son's really good at football, but then there might actually be one that is really good and the rest just suck. So everyone, especially today, with Instagram and all these things, everyone's like, I'm out living my life. and they think they've had this really weird life. And I don't think they have. I think most people my age just sit in the room, play video games, and then, If your right hand causes you to sin, better to cut it off and to cast your body into the fire. You know what I mean? So, but for me, it has been interesting. I feel like a bit of a vagabond that's been around everywhere and checked out everything. And I'm actually glad I did it because it's given me a very unbiased view of the world. I actually did a stream with Topher a couple of weeks ago. And when we were doing it, he said something that resonated true with me. It was that if you're born a Christian or a Muslim or a Jay, you've never actually been the thing. You're just kind of plodding along with what's been ingrained in you. And I think I was born the cold, hard atheist, the nothing matters. Do what you want, live your life, but just wear a condom and you'll be fine. And I think the real hitter that hit me when it came to realizing, and I know it sounds funny now, and I think as our boy Pluto starts to descend, you think he's going to wreak havoc on all this stuff. But, you know, the idea that we came from slime, which fornicated for a long time, and that's how we have, you know, the habeas corpus legal system and all that, that kind of fell apart for me when the globe thing got shattered. I think, God forbid it, I think it was Eric Dubé, and then when Owen came across it, that whole the globe and the space thing, and once that sort of that egregore fell apart in my head, it was like, right, so there actually is something that made by there is something that made my nervous system. It's not from a slush and fornication. And then from there, because I hadn't had any sort of jurisdiction with any religion, and I really want to get into that idea of religion, because I'm still, I don't like religion, and that's not God. It's where a prophet comes and a Pharisee builds a religion around that prophet that he never followed. And that's not unique to one specific Abrahamic sect. The Judaism has it, Christianity has it, Islam certainly has it, where a prophet comes and he says, okay, we're doing this. And then the Pharisees in the robe come around 100 years later, and they build a religion about what that guy said, had nothing to do with what he said. And it's just complete nonsense in essence. So from there, I kind of jumped around looking at different religions. And I think I have a good understanding as to how the Abrahamic stuff works. And whether it's me that's done it, or it's just simply, me pulling in circumstances externally from what's inside me, I don't have a dogmatic view of anything. So now, I don't know if you guys have seen, but to me, it's pretty clear they're trying to drum up this Christian versus Muslim, you know, Allahu Akbar, Christ is King, go kill each other in a field thing. And I can see it a mile away. And what's interesting is the disagreements. If you took the Quran and the Bible, and this is coming from a non, I literally don't care what anyone believes, and that really doesn't bother me at all. If you took the Quran and the Bible, they're the same. I can't explain it. They're the same. It's just like if you took Jesus, the final prophet before the messenger of the Quran, it's just like taking the book before that and adding in Jesus. It's the same book, just extra stuff. And all the critics that people have of quote-unquote Islam, which you can't really define either, none of it's in the Quran. So I'll give you an example. The Quran says don't divide into sects. But as soon as you decide you want to become a Muslim, which you can't, again, really define, you have to choose a sect. So do you see how it's kind of like with Christianity, where Jesus said, the kingdom of God is within, where two or three gather in my name, there I am. And then you walk into a church and it's like, eat flesh, be a part of the big church. And you're like, no. Or in the Bible, where it says man having long hair is an abomination in the Old Testament, and then no graven images, don't erect idols of me, and then you go into a church and it's an erected idol of an image of a guy with long hair, and you're like, that's not what he said. And that has the same connotations in quote-unquote Islam. And I think that's what happens. You ascribe powers to God from extra stuff from Pharisees, and that's where all these wars and debacles come from. So all the dogmatic stuff that Muslims don't like about Christians, you can't really find in the Bible. And all the stuff that Christians don't like about Muslims, you can't find in the Quran. And I'm looking at it from the outside. I'm on the outside looking in. I wasn't born Arab. I wasn't born into an evangelical home. And I'm looking at how tedious is, and it's strange to me, because even when you bring people this information, they don't they don't sit back. It's like when you tell people, you know, hey, I love your cartoons, yeah the Death Star, there's no 8-inch per mile square curve measurable with a P900 camera, and they don't go, it's interesting. They're just like, oh yes, I'm glad that flat earthers exist, so I know that I'm smart. Like, you know what I mean? They don't sit and consider it. They just get angry. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens soon. But the rabbit hole just runs endless, let's say, with this sort of stuff. And I don't know how it's going to. I think it is going to end with just war, probably, for those who choose it, in my view.
Oh man, what a fun introduction to your flow. I'm enjoying it already. I can't help but agree with the notion that the Quran is just Christianity, but with extra books tacked on. I mean, especially
So I don't mean to interrupt. I because it's early in the morning and I really get fired up about stuff. Sometimes my mannerisms can escape me. I apologize for interrupting there.
It's okay. We also got Mars just entered into Aries. So there's going to be, going to be stuff like that. No problem. But what I've looked into the universality of religions quite extensively. It's something that I'm endlessly fascinated with and looking to find how I can syncretize the various aspects of a mythos with another one. And my favorite author on this type of thing is Godfrey Higgins. I really like the early 1800s researchers. They were on a different level, in that sort of height of the British Empire. They had access to stuff from around the world and the noblemen that were pursuing these higher learning causes. And although I haven't really found a lot of references to it outside of Higgins, he does talk about this cycle called the Nero cycle. And it's essentially a 600 or 650, sometimes 608. It depends on, which priesthood has got a hold of the idea. But it's a cycle that they believed was the amount of time between incarnations of the firstborn of the first cause or the protagonos. So that would be an example would be Jesus. When you go through, there's lots of examples of this divine incarnation, and they all fit a similar pattern typically, although not always identical. And what I find fascinating about the emergence of Islam is that it occurred within that window of like the 608 years after Christ is when Muhammad shows up. And so I look at that and I think, is this just a continuation of something that was going on for a very long time, that at a certain interval, it was built into the system that there would be a type of reset to, their their symbols and their teachings, whether or not there's even the necessity for a living man to have existed historically, but they would put it into the, they'd often retroactively apply this idea of being an incarnation to somebody who had a great that fit the time window that had a great impact on human civilization and culture. And of course, I can't know. It's like an appeal to motive, right? Which is sort of a logical fallacy. But I suspect that the reason why this was built into the mystery school tradition would be that if you leave a religion and its prophet or its son of God as is with their Pharisees and all that for too long and things are too entrenched, the idolatry will just continue to exponentially get out of control. And then if you come in and sort of shake it all up and reset it back to its basics every 600 years, maybe that's like a failsafe for trying to reduce the idolatrousness of and the fetishism of the people who follow the religion. And when you look at how, from my understanding is limited with Islam, but when you look at how that entered into the scene, it does appear like the whole point was to strip things back down to what actually mattered and get rid of a bunch of the stuff that, again, that got tacked on. And now we've got Christianity potentially for 2,000 years, unless the chronology is wrong, which is very possible. And people have gotten really far away from the esoteric truths behind it. But I see Gabe kind of, dancing in his chair. I'm going to kick it over to him. We might have a little delay with him, but we'll give him a shot.
Thank you, buddy. Yes, this is a wonderful intro. So many places to go and things to say and share. I want to share my most recent decode was just this morning. Rebecca Schaefer is a famous murder case in everybody's mouth right now, getting echoed through the chambers. It's an anagram for Red Heifer. Rebecca Schaefer is an anagram for Red Heifer. And so they have inseminated their program into our mouths a million times. And so also just today, I watched a fella, Esoterica, try to convince everybody that Marxism is not religious and put some distance behind between Marxism and it's satanic. It's the dark satanic mills from which it was born. And I see this as a very important stopgap measure that they're trying to put in place. And he's talking about how Karl Marx was talking about commodity fetishism. And this is where the magic happens. And he's trying to logic out this difference to make some to make sure that Karl Marx is non-spiritual so that they can secularize the entire program of Karl Marx. Was what he was trying to do. And my comment in his comment section, I have to brag. This is, I think, my favorite comment I've made in a long time. So he's talking about commodity fetishism and how somehow the slothful people, the rich people, don't have to do anything. And in fact, we're down here with the commodity fetishism. We've deified inanimate objects since that, and we're chasing them around, just like Beauty and the Beast. All right, so here's my response to commodity fetishism is not magic. Commodity fetishism, fueling the indolent investment class, commode deity. The commode deity, Belphegor giggles from the gap, remembering how toilet paper ran out while the production line converted butt tissue into toxic mask utility.
Missed you, buddy.
I think that might be my best comment on YouTube ever.
I really missed you on Vibrance.
The commode deity, that makes a lot of sense when you look at it. That's why I got off that calendar. Me and Topher were speaking about it. The Gregorian, I'll leave this for later on, but like just in a quick tidbit. I think everything that you're born with, obviously you can change, everything you're born with is kind of gatekept and designed to take you out of that sort of, the word in Islam is the fitra, which is the idea that, you know how people say, I think this is why the whole evolution thing, is that if you don't have somebody telling you what to do and a boot over your neck and an appeal to authority in everything you believe and do, you'll go off and do horrible stuff. But the probably the true nature is you have this inbuilt fitra, which is the idea that if left untouched, man will have a certain prerogative. And the best way I could analogize it is if you don't teach young children the wonders of S-O-D-O-M-Y in school, their natural fitra is they're 13, they see a pretty girl, they want to get married, they want to have a family. And if you're not, you know, messing with that, pulling that, you know, like the calendar we're on now, it's like reset an hour. Oh no, you're ahead an hour. Start a month in the middle of a week. 30 days, 1 month, 28 the night. Like all these things are just designed to make you feel, you know, you got your rubber shoes on and you're not connected to the earth. And then you kind of make an idol out of what's on Alibaba.com and you're just consume. So I can see it a mile away, but that's very interesting. Commodity.
I want to say something too about the point you're just making. I had a tuning with a dude yesterday, and it was kind of like an aspect of the case that was a little tough for me to crack was figuring out that I was trying to get to the bottom of why there was this irrational, like there was this tendency for irrational desires that was evident in his field, like. Things I can't have. I want things that I can't have, essentially. I was trying to figure out the origins of that. And what I ended up discovering was as a young man, I guess probably like 18 or 19, he had looked at all of the like sickness and retardation of society and how everyone believed stuff that was so false and they were so willingly enslaved by the system or the man. And he had mentally, subconsciously associated all of that and rejecting all of that with also rejecting just the normal expressions of a healthy life in its course, like getting married, committing to one woman, having children, you know, being doing just stable, normal dude stuff. And it, you know, kind of, it was kind of throwing him for a loop in life at different times. And it wasn't until later that he figured out, actually, I do want those, what you might call normal things. But I wonder if part of the disclosure of method to those with eyes to see also is like this crazy deeper psychology game to get people to reject just normal, healthy aspects of life by association. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. And I've thought this for a while, and I've had conversations within like private group chats and stuff about this, where I think one of the, I'm of the opinion and the grand stasis that after every problem, they send little satans, like shaitans. And me and my wife were talking about this as well. We were like, well, it was me that brought it up. I think what they do is they ascribe such garbage with God, and they use that garbage to gatekeep the idea of God. And then you've seen this with like why Britain became so atheistic. It's because you had all these Christian men who were like, you know, the kingdom of God's within, probably. And then you had the demons in the white robes be like, Jesus wants you to run into shrapnel. And then they did it. And then they came back and they ascribed God with the PDF file in the robe. And they just, all of this out the window, I'm going to go get a drink. And you can see this in the Islamic world now because the apocalypse is the revealing. And these people that you would have seen as moral, like Christians 50 years ago, they're moral people, or Muslims 10 years ago that were moral people. And then you find out it wasn't that they were that good. They just didn't have access to sin because their laws didn't allow them to have it. And now that iPhones are in Kuwait and nightclubs are now legal in Saudi Arabia, you're going to see people for what they are. It's the revealing. And I think Islam statistically is the fastest growing religion in terms of birth rate, but it's the fastest dying religion in terms of youth apostasy. And that's, so there's a bit of word salad there. So your David Woods on one side will be like, it's the fastest dying religion. And then your Muhammad Hijabs on the other will be like, it's the fastest growing. And it's like, you can't just all be honest about it. You know what I mean? And I think what happens is people will, you know, they'll become they'll be a Jay, or they'll be a Christian, or they'll be a Muslim. And then the Pharisee will say some stupid stuff like, put money in the basket, or your prophet married a six-year-old. And then they ascribe the stuff that's not in the Bible, not in the Quran, with that. And then they throw the baby out with the bathwater, meaning, because I've said this for a while, you'll see all these young girls on these ex-Muslim pages. And it's not that they go, you know, maybe, I don't know, we'll see, maybe I have a different view on things. And they go off and they sit on the grass and they make little dandelions. And they're like, maybe one day I'll figure out the truth. They're just in a club the next day, like, duh, 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 duh. My value is how many guys can see me with no clothes. Like, they join the other cult. Like, they can't think for themselves. They just throw all semblance of morality, all semblance of just being a non-reprobate mind person. They throw the baby out with the bathwater. They associate the garbage with God. And I think that's the whole point, that the garbage is allowed to, like, persist. It's just to gatekeep that connection to God. Like, because that's one of the reasons I've always migrated sort of what you guys are doing, what the Bears are doing, and what my end Topher is doing, right? It's that idea that there is no authority above you, and the only person that has jurisdiction over you is your creator. And then you go into the religion of what was revealed after the Bible, Quran, and Torah, and there's always a link between. There's a man that you must get approval from. And if you go, hey, how come in the Quran, Muhammad says he knows nothing outside of the human compulsion and he's just a messenger and he knows nothing of the end of times, but in the other extra stuff that came 300 years after he died, he can do things outside of the human compulsion, like fly on a horse to the moon, and he knows all about the ends of times and can see the end. Like, that doesn't make sense. And if you do that, then you were never a real believer. And if you're a Christian and you're like, hey, Jesus said, beware of those who come in my name, and say, I am the Christ. Beware of them if they come in the desert or if they say they saw me in secret chambers. And then this Paul guy met him in a secret chamber on the desert and was an apostle after he said no more apostles. Oh, you were never, you're not a real believer. But then what they do at that point is they don't go, like Jesus said, the kingdom of God is within. They just go, I'm going to go to the Beatles and take a loan. You know, that's what happens. They throw everything out with the, they associate what's correct with the garbage. And I don't know, I think it's kind of tedious at this point, but you can see it now with the quote-unquote apostasy of the Islamic religions. They don't go, religion is not God. They just join the new global homo cult, and that's it. You know what I mean? So it'd be interesting to see how it plays out. But yeah.
I think the crux of it all is the only real morality is the morality you do, or like the good that you do because of good's sake, right? The training wheels that religion offers would be, here are the guidelines that we have accepted socially that, you know, these are keys to your success and to not condemn yourself to pain and suffering, right? I mean, I consider the wages of sin are just the natural ramifications of doing things not in alignment with the way that nature and God intends them to be done. And so it's not like you need to get struck by the thunderbolt of Zeus as punishment. It's the things that are morally wrong become their own punishment given enough of a timeline, right? And so really it's like the same question that every kid is always so frustrated by not having answered. Why? The only teaching that would be useful on like a large scale in society that we could maybe label religion would be that which gives people the why, and not just because I said so. And a lot of like religious law or morality does come in that packaging of because I said so. You're doing this because the authority said this was what's right. Mm-hmm. And that's what eventually, you know, people that are that wise up from their own folly, they do so because they realize like, oh, good intrinsically comes with its own rewards. You know, most of all that I don't self-destruct, self-annihilate. And Gabe's dancing again. I better kick it over to you, buddy.
Thank you. I want to attach to that, you know, you don't need a lightning bolt from Zeus to punish you. You also don't need a gavel to come and apply the hexenhammer on your soul. And you're right. It's like, and that's the natural law that, you know, that we all harmonize to. And I want to maybe thread a connection between that word vitra that you mentioned. The vitra is like, if you left people untampered with, there's a natural state. And that's what these books of guidance are supposed to give us. And I love Chance's theory, but that the Abrahamics are a triangle. And no matter where you go on a topic, you end up getting cornered into another triangle. That's a really cool thought experiment. But what if this vitra, I want to postulate that the vitra is related to the word reverted. You were reverted to Islam. This is important because I think it relates to anamnesis. Anamnesis is a philosophical term, and it means remembering. And it has a great deal to do with the fact that we're never learning anything. We're actually here remembering most of it. And that is what we're pursuing. We're pursuing this. I call it a buoyancy. I call anamnesis a buoyancy. And it kind of means that if it's true enough, it'll float way above the rest. The truth of it will naturally, if you allow it, reveal itself. And that buoyancy we call remembering. And so this is how we test truth. So I just wanted to mention that the vitra is kind of an anagram in the word reverted. So when you said I'm reverted, and it is vitra that gives us a compass to come back to a natural honorific state, I think that reverted has the word vitra. Am I saying that right? V-I-T-R-A? Or is it an F?
It has as F, not V. Vitra. So F-I-T-R-A.
That's a philological allowance, though. You can swap F and
B. Okay, I'm going to... Yes. I want to have some fun while I have the mic, and I want to mention that F is the sixth letter. It's a very superstitious letter, F, and it does swap out for the V very easily. But you mentioned Digamma. That your prophet. You mentioned that your prophet married a child at the age of six. Well, six is the Gemini card that is signified by marriage. So being married to the six is very interesting. George Mesa is going to do a show on the F sharp in this, how the F note is superstitious for way more reasons than we can account for. But I think it's fascinating that your prophet is stigmatized for marrying a six-year-old, and this card is in the seat of the sixth position. And so the sixiness of the sixth position is provoking on all three Abrahamic levels. And I call this the hinge. I think that you have to do all three of the Abrahamics to even talk about it. And if you haven't gone the distance on all three, then you're just standing around in a circular shooting squad, a circular firing squad. Mm-hmm. And so the hinge of Muhammad, when he comes back from traveling through time, riding on Barak, he comes back and the hinge snaps shut and he realizes not a second has passed. I'm right where I started. And it is the hinge is a collapsing of parallel dimensions that all the Abrahamics have to abide by. And I'm telling you that it is the same story told three different ways. And the words are the swords that open the doors to see that it is the same story told in a big fat pyramid triangle. So, the words, the doors, the gatekeepers, the hinge, all of this is hiding behind language. Our language is what divides us. It is the sword that cuts us from what is already here, and we know it.
Well, that's crazy. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the hinge. That's crazy. That we're just remembering everything, eh?
That's what the word cardinal means in for the Catholic Church. The cardinals are the hinge. That's what cardio is in Latin, something like that, or that phonetic root. So it's interesting because there's a lot of that like gatekeeper idea just baked in and that your heart is also like this hinge or this door or this gate is fascinating. I love all of the sixiness that you just brought up, and that even the point of marriage is, at least legally speaking, that you're allowed to have six. And this is the sixth letter is F, and we call that active procreation effing. I mean, it's all there.
Yeah, it's true. That's crazy when you think about it. It's interesting because, like, I guess my head's going in a strange direction now. But just that, did you guys see that whole the Bishop Mary Manuel thing that happened? Oh, do you know like the big pastor in Australia where it was claimed that some Muslim 16-year-old ran in and shouted Allahu Akbar, and then he went to stab the pastor, but he didn't have. But Mary put his cross up, and Jesus came out the cross and went, "No, naughty Muslim, stop!" And then his thing wouldn't eject, and to me it just seemed like an MK Ultra kid was like just sent in. I don't think Mary Manuel was in on it. I think he's actually quite a cool guy. But I can see they're doing all these things now that are, it's just to get the Muslims and Christians to fight. And I guess while I'm on here, I'll kind of try and stop that. But like even the whole Muhammad marrying a six-year-old, it's not in the Quran. Like it's not there. And the only difference between the Quran and the Bible is that it claims to be perfect. It claims to be from God. And claims to be complete. And so all these criticisms people have of quote unquote Islam, that kind of, I think it just gatekeeps them from the Quran. Because I've read, the Bible's great. I like the Bible. I think the Gospels are great. It's just tricky when you get into it because it's like Jesus is the Son of God, yet that's omitted in the Synoptic Gospels. And then you're like, the Son of God, like dies on the 22nd, rises on the 25th, born of a Virgo. And the house of bread, which translates to Bethlehem, is he the son? Like, I don't know. But yeah, just all these, like this dogmatic fighting that's going to happen. It's just like all the accusations of like, you're all just terrorists. It's like the Quran says in it that if you kill one man unrightly, it's as if you killed the whole world. And if you save one man from injustice, it's as if you saved the whole. And then terror, and it's just all over the shop. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, that six thing's wild. You know, like a year ago, if you were to tell me about true, like what Athan Chimente is doing, that true sidereal astrology, if you were to tell me about that a year ago, I'd just be like, oh, let me guess. So I'm a Libra and you're a Virgo, so we should bang. And so, you know, they gatekeep it endlessly to make it look ridiculous. And then, but all these things, like the numerology aspect of it, the language is a big one. I'm really getting into the language side of things, where how, you know, it's the spelling of words, you know, like, you'll learn a lot from this broadcast of spelling, you know. So it's very interesting, to say the least. I'm totally concordant.
You know, the one thing that's definitely similar from the Bible to the Quran is the astrotheology fingerprints, which I don't think that it means that there's a that it's like fraudulent, but I do think that it means that it's allegory, which is, in my opinion, more powerful, honestly. But there's at least two passages in the Quran that say that it was written on a celestial tablet in heaven, which is like the definition of Lumashi or constellation writing. The Quran, is, if I'm not mistaken, means the recital. So
yes,
you're reciting what you're reading out of the heavens or the stars. That's essentially like the gist of its origin. But, you know, I wanted to actually shift gears for a second, and maybe not for a second, but, you know, we haven't even brought up that you started your own social media, which I think is really interesting. I don't know if Gabe even realized that. Can you talk about it, man? Tell people what, you know, inspired you to do that and what's going on with it and what it is.
Yeah, so it's actually funny you say that, because I'm actually selling it now.
Sure, it's but great. It's still cool that you did it.
It's great. I think the lesson learned, though, you know, so like the Quran says the difference between the Quran, so like Jesus, it was a message for the people of Bani Israel and all that. The difference with the, so every prophet, basically the, you'll see why I'm linking this, is the actual, if you read the Bible and you read the Quran and you read the Torah, it's all about a society becomes decadent. A prophet is sent to warn that society of its sin. And if they do not turn it around, the punishments of God will become binding, and except for one, where they do, in all the Abrahamic faiths, they don't turn around and they get annihilated. And the difference between the Bible, the Torah, and the Quran is that it says Muhammad is the seal of the prophet, the prophets, and he is a messenger for the entire world. What's interesting is quote unquote, when you revert, if you're a white guy, because you don't have brown skin and haven't worn a thobe for 15 years straight, people start just projecting. Because you know this, like if you try and make your own social media and you don't have access to a central bank, or you're not funded by BlackRock, or haven't been to 15 dinner parties with Maria Abramovich, you can't make it free. So it has to be paywalled, or the thing just goes under. So I think ours is like, £1 a month or £12 a year, which is like $15 a year. So say it's quite similar to the Bertaria Times app. But just the amount of gaslighting you get around it is ridiculous. And I've just decided I'm going to sell it. But it's great. It's cool, because people don't realize what, like social media, I think people really underestimate if it's in idle hands and it is really aimed towards young people. And until they have that inner authority, like the ability to authorize their own being, they get attacked by this bombardment of propaganda. And this is really hitting the Muslim world bad, because you have all these young girls who get a phone. So they're like, no fornication, no, none of this, no free mixing, but they get a phone and then their ads pop up and it's like, your AI mafia boyfriend wants to come, and it, like, just a craziness. So I was like, so I got banned on YouTube. It was because I made a video about usury, and I did a video with E. Michael Jones where I was talking about the fact that every young child in the world is in essence molested prior to puberty with high-speed internet porn. And then they said that I was sexualizing kids and all that. So I just thought, you know what, fuck off. And I made my own and it was great. But then people start projecting out. They're like, oh, you're just using God for money. Oh, I've stared at a screen for 14 hours a day. Hashtag no false idols. I'm just going to get rid of it because it's just the if people want hell, they can just have hell. You know what I mean? And I've noticed this personally myself. Is the amount of, again, this is why I've always gravitated towards, you know, this side of the internet with like the bears and everything, is that you realize people just want to whinge. And when you complain, you're breeding a mindset of subservience and inferiority and having an authority and therefore an idol outside of your creator. Because you're like, if you're just whinging endlessly, you're in essence just saying you're powerless and somebody is doing it to you, which is creating, that is deifying an institution or a man or a collective group of people or a financial system. And the number one rule in Islam and Christianity is have no idols before me, and what's called shirk, which is ascribing a power to God. And you realize it's like all these big Islamic influencer guys who were like, look at what they're doing. They're spreading so much haram. And I was like, hey, look, I've made one. And then they don't join. And it's just like you want to complain because you want the ad revenue and you want the clicks and you want the disrupt, intrigue, click and all. You know what I mean? So just don't make anything around religion. I don't know how to explain it. It's just people will just endlessly project out on you. And what I've noticed now with this sort of Kali Yuga, where the victim mentality is just pervasive, like it flows through people's veins like heroin, is they use God as a bashing mechanism. So what it becomes is, imagine you're playing basketball, me and another guy are playing basketball, and you're just dunking on him. Like his girlfriend's there, and you just up dunk and just smacks him on the ground, right? He can either then go, I've been lazy, I've not been going to bed at a correct time, my diet sucks, I'm very nervous because all I do is indulge in sin, I need to train harder, or he can just go, dunking is haram, you are the bad man. Like, so that's what they do. They have this idea that God really loves them, really hates everybody else, and kind of it's almost kind of like God's just there to appease their shit. And I'm not going to attack like the Muslim side of this, because Christians do this a lot personally. Like Jesus will come along and he'll be like, I was tempted by the devil for 40 days, and I said no while tempted with all the lands of the world. And then in John, he's like, you will go on to do greater things than me. And then fast forward 1,000 or 2,000 years, depending on, again, the chronology of it, what you believe went on. It's just a bunch of drunk, like every deadly sin is just indulged in, to like it's just absorbed into their being. And then Jesus is kind of just like this slave who they're just like, Jesus, where the fuck are you? Where's the dead man with long hair? Fucking come here. And they pull him up and they're like, are you going to forgive me? Yeah. Okay, fuck off. And then they go and sin even more. And then they're just like, Jesus, what the fuck? And they pick him up again. And they look him in the eye. They're like, I know you said men shouldn't have long hair. Mr. Dead Man with long hair, are you going to forgive me? And then Jesus is like, I forgive you. I love you. And then they just throw him away again. And they're like, where can I get some more Budweiser? Then you see that all the time with the religious people. Now, God's just kind of this thing that they pull out of their pocket to justify. It's kind of like, you know, girls, like a lot of girls in the West now, and I'm not a red pill guy, but the modern era of females, they pull out the word love, and it's kind of like their spaghetti monster in the sky word, which means they can do no wrong. You know, like Christians don't do that. Like Christians don't just like rob someone, kill someone, and send their kid to school to get taught how to be a trans. Just sin, sin, sin. But then they're like, Christ is king. As in, oh, you're so saved. But then you read the Bible and the Quran. And Satan, the shaitan, the demon, the one who invokes all of the suffering in this realm, he asks God for permission to rebel. And in the Quran, he's like, no, I fear the Lord of all creation. In the Bible, he asks God to rebel. And you're like, so Satan knows that God is God. Does that mean he is saved and can have no sin? So does your Christ as King, which Jesus doesn't say, if you say Christ as King, then you're saved eternally or whatever. Like, it's just this bashing mechanism where it's just like, and this word revokes all actions. And girls in the West do that. Where nowadays a guy will get with a girl, and this isn't me projecting because I'm married, it's great. But guys will get with a girl and they'll come home after working 13 hours a day. And the girl's like, just watch 50 Shades of Grey and I slept with your friend. And then the guy's like, what have you done? And then, or like they'll catch them being a hoe or cheating or something. And then the girl's like, but wait, I love you. And then flowers come down and they've said the magic spaghetti word and all has been forgiven. And that's kind of just what people use God as now for. It's never about, and like you were saying earlier, Chance, you were like, it was something you said with regards to, do you need someone to beat you down? You don't need to be struck by lightning to know not to sin. And you see this with people today. I speak to them. I'm like, it's just about being good for the sake of being good. And these scriptures are kind of how to do it. It's like, don't do usury. Don't do fornication. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. All this sort of stuff. Don't have.
You know, I've got an idea though. That's just come to me. You know, I want to just tack on because maybe it isn't as self-evident not to sin now as it might have been in the past. Mm-hmm. I say that because, you know, I've been kicking around a notion that not only does sin compromise you on like a health level, on a, you know, on just the quality of your existence on in all ways, but probably compromises your overall success in what you attempt to do in life too. And maybe the like usury culture, debt-based system, you know, taking out loans against our future, essentially, you know, making things harder for each successive generation by getting the easy button now, right? I mean, that's what Owen's been on all week with Boomer Week, going really hard about that, which has been super funny. My point being, maybe with all of the cushioning of society, at least for the West, that takes some of the edge off of the what otherwise would be repercussions for, you know, natural repercussions for immoral behavior, right? Like there's a pill to mask the symptom that you're developing. You know, you can really, like, people can ride it till the wheels fall off completely rather than there being a more obvious stepwise progression down, like downward spiraling based on their behavior. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe that's part of the whole point is of like this whole debt-based system is that it allows people to perpetuate their sin in a longer run than maybe would have been possible for people that were like, you know, like the homesteader types, the self-sufficient types, the independent types. They're some of the more likely to be highly moral people. And I think it's because it's required for them to even be able to succeed in their chosen lifestyle as detached from the grid as they can possibly be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. It's interesting you brought that up because you were saying the astro-theological side of these texts, and it was actually Santos Bonacci that put me onto that. Like, really, when you look at the, and again, it's not to say these guys didn't exist, but when you look at the Mithra and the Horus comparison with Jesus, and you're like, ah, so the sun, the light of this world, the sun, all this stuff. It kind of gave me a different view on what's going on.
I mean, Dylan showed me a 500 BC Etruscan, like, carved ostrich egg that has a crucified guy on a cross that is also an anchor with, like, a crescent on top, Islamic symbol. And the inscription is in ancient Etruscan, read right to left with no vowels, and it says Orpheus Bacchus. So there's Orpheus Bacchus, who's on the cross, identical to later Orthodox Christian imagery of Jesus on an anchor cross. My point being, this system has been around for a really long time. All these motifs are ancient, and a lot of the role of the Pharisee is to try to stamp out any evidence that they were co-opting a pre-existing system. if that makes sense. Yeah, there it is. The Hanged Man in tarot. Mm. It's an old idea.
Yeah, I totally agree. My opinion of things now, bro, I don't know. Like, I might get a lot of stick for this, but I'm at the point now where even things like this, what's going on, and I'm not, like, I'm very opposed to Zion, obviously, but even things like the quote-unquote Palestine Israel thing that's going on, there's a part of me now that's like, is it even real? Or is it just energy harvesting? You know, this idea where, like, in the Quran, it says that on the day of judgment, the shaitan will say, he only ever called you, and you answered his call. And it's the same as in the Bible, where Satan is below you in dominion, so all he can do is get your consent. And I think with these things, is it just to drop you down like in a thermometer? So then the sort of input-output mechanism is negative. And the reason I'm bringing that up is I'm now at the point where I don't really, and I've seen like Frazzle Drip and all this stuff. But I don't even know if that's real. But you ever read Morals and Dogma, where Albert Pike says that the goal of the Freemasons is to stress the population so much to force the cream of that population to rise so they can then use it. And you're like, you know, all these things, like the astro-theological side of things and the really pushing sin out of your system and taking in this high quality of information. Like, would any of us autistically have looked into the water we're drinking had we not been stressed with all this propaganda? And then you look at the sky clock, where you're like, it appears to be there's a reset every 500,000 years. Like, I think last was probably the Tartarian one, where, I don't know, black sun below electromagnetic firmament. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I was explained it that in essence, that the frequency emitted would liquefy the dirt, and then you reset and you raise up. So, like, before Noah, if everyone was standing on the where the sea, where the ocean floor would be now, you'd have a higher oxygen concentration, you'd have more red light from the sun. Bible and Quran talk about how Noah lived to 800 years old. If you're that far down, it would make sense. Reset, you raise up. And then you have the next one, like maybe there's a fire, there's a lot of evidence of like buildings that were just melted, raise up. And then you have the Tartarian mud flood, you raise up. And I think my view on it now is, if you were wondering, like, why do they make the astro-theological astrology side of things look so completely ridiculous? And I was watching Narco Longo's video on the Jekyll Island thing with the Temucuans, etc. And you see J.P. Morgan's clock. You ever seen that? John Pierpoint Morgan, the guy who set the billionaire, the clock that he used to carry around with him was like, it was like the Prague clock, but on steroids. It was just this beautiful like concoction that had the sky clock in it, all the ages and cycles. And then there was that John Carnegie wrote a book on how to control the world with what's in the sky, and it never got published. Like, the richest guy in the world at that point was Andrew Carnegie. And you're like, if these guys knew that every 500 years, based on what is in the sky, there's going to be a reset, kind of like what the Bible and the Quran talk about. Look at the people of Lut and Sodom and Gomorrah. It becomes decadent, and the punishments of God become... If you look at Talmud, all these people are like a lot, sorry, I don't know, the terminology is different. Or Noah, or Abraham, that becomes so decadent with one sin, like Sodom and Gomorrah was the sodomy, Abraham was the idol worship, and it gets destroyed. And the only difference now is that it's the message for the whole world. And you're like, what sin in those previous civilizations aren't existing today? You've got the sodomy, you've got the financial crimes, you've got the idolatry, you've got all of it. And it's like, do these elites know that in 250 years, there's going to be a reset? And you wrap up the earth into a ball and you hide maybe 15 other continents we have access to. And do you just stress that population endlessly with garbage to force the cream of the crop to rise? And then when the reset's about to happen, you just take those really base ones and you move them over and just start again. So I had this victim mindset of like, they're coming, they're going to come, and they're going to touch me in my sleep, and they're going to make me. It's just, it doesn't resonate with me at all.
The priesthood of victimhood requires the idea of a devil, basically. You know, like that there's something to blame outside yourself, right? And what we are talking about right now, like to just sort of sum it up, is that, which I find interesting, that the Quran actually says that Satan asked permission to rebel. That pretty much explains that the entire role of what we perceive of as evil in the world is to strengthen us. And we should be able to recognize that in our life, that everything that ever happened that was outside of our control, that seemed like it wasn't what we wanted or was hardship, that it made us stronger, it made us grow. So there's really actually only good. And I use this example all the time, but you know, thinking about words, the yod hey vav hey word, it means life or existence. That's actually the definition. It's the same as the word Eve, actually, just means life. So Satan is supposed to be the adversary, right? The opposite, the opposer. The opposite of existence or life is non-existence, which means it means that if you pursue the unbalanced forces, if you act in ways that are unbalanced too long, you will cease to exist. Anything that's unbalanced in the world does not continue to exist. So, you know, Satan, as that allegory, fulfills a really important role. It removes things that are out of balance from existence, and it strengthens things that were imbalanced but find balance through the challenges that come about from being unbalanced. So it's like all of it is there for good. If the opposite of life, existence, Jehovah is non-existence, that means the only thing that exists is the goodness of life and existence. And everything else is a temporary illusion. Thus, you know, temporary meaning it ceases to exist after a time, so it was never real to begin with. And what is real? What is real is like life, birth, the continuation of humanity, you know, the eternality of consciousness or soul or spirit. It's there's no boogeyman in all this. And that's really important. You gotta get rid of all the boogeymen. As soon as you notice that you have one, you gotta question to yourself, like, am I making an excuse for my own bad behavior and pegging it on this boogeyman? And always that'll be the case. That's always how it works.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting. The analogy I make is I just got turpentine because I've been looking into, I forgot her name already, Jennifer Daniels. And I would say what the J's and what because people were perceiving it's the J's, I don't know. Like, of course, it looks like they are, but I always just think there's rings above it and it probably just goes to Satan. It's kind of like a Taurus field where, like, the farther up you go, you're like, it's the J's, it's the J's, it's Satan. And then it just comes back around and you're like, it's me. You know what I mean?
Cthulhu just wants a hug.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just like these parasitic entities, because that's the best way I would describe them. They're parasites. They're like candida, but candida can only eat off the shit that you've chosen to ingest. Like, they're just eating your garbage. It's like if you didn't have the garbage. Like, and I said this in Owen's Telegram yesterday, and then I left because, like, the Telegram, it's just like a gamma hive. And some guy was, like, complaining, and I'm like, these J's that you whinge about, like, just don't take. I get that they do sneaky propaganda, that if you have a pliable mind, you'll fall into it. But it's like, just don't take their loans, don't watch their dirty movies, don't cheat on you, don't do any of this stuff, and they can't really do much to you. Like, obviously there's something like property tax, but there's always loopholes around with the loyal title and all that. So it's like this victim mindset that I see, like, I think as time goes on, you're going to see, like what Topher said, in 20 years, when I think we enter the 11th house, which is ruled by Pisces, it's going to become a really internally dominant world as opposed to what it is now.
You mean Aquarius?
Aquarius, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, just want to correct.
No, you're fine. I'm still shaky with all this stuff. I'm getting a hang of it.
Yeah, you're 22, dude. You're crushing.
I'll get there soon, right? just wait. Just wait in 10 years when I own a boat called the Titan, and there's a bunch of people opposing me. And I have a famous quote called astrology is done by trillionaires in Bitcoin, not millionaires in Fedcoin. And they all get sunk on my boat and I start the Federal Reserve 2.0, right? Just you, I'll be walking around with my pie. But it's an interesting point I was going to make. I can't remember what it was. What I think it's going to be is it's going to be the focus is going to be super personal, and people who once didn't are going to start flocking to religion and the idea of God. But because if you look 4 years ago, because during COVID, I was 18. Is that a trigger word? It should be fine now. I don't think they censor that as bad as they used
to. No, the psyop's over.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. Okay. But I remember when I was 18, I was listening to Owen and he was like, don't wear a mask, don't be a pussy. And I was like, great, I'm not doing it. So I was 18 and I would never, and the amount of abuse I got from adults for not wearing it was insane. But fast forward 4 years, if you go into any normie Facebook post about COV, in the comments, they're all like, yeah, if it's a government, the government doesn't like you. And I'm like, oh, really? So they changed their mentality so fast. And I think in 20 years, especially once the shape of the earth and like space comes out, because have you seen this with the Indian landing and the China one that happened the other day? It's like they're purposefully making the CGI look terrible as a way to kind of like control the backlash that is going to come out as fake. And I think when that happens, you're going to see a bunch of people who weren't religious before just running around screaming Allahu Akbar, Oy Vey, Christ is King. And it's going to, but it's not going to be the empowered sense of God. It's going to be the victim thing where like everyone's a victim. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah, where people are just like munching on kids in the street and they're squealing in complete euphoria, but they're all victims. You know what I mean? Like it's just pure decadence, degeneracy, sin, but they're the victim. And I think that's probably what's going to happen in terms of what goes on. But yeah, I think the victim thing, in my view, is the biggest, for me, this is just me projecting out, is the enemy in this world. Because Satan, if you don't want to be victimized, you won't be victimized. If you want to be a victor, you'll be a victor. Just the circumstances that you endure together are a bit different.
You know? We have to talk about, if we're talking about victim consciousness and religion, it would be wrong of us not to bring up the meaning of victim is the original meaning of the word is the offering of a sacrifice. And we've kind of made it a more, someone's doing something to me in a non-religious context, outside of my control, I'm being transgressed against. That's the meaning of victim. And I won't even deny that there's possibility that, somebody could do wrong to another person. And in the right context, you could use the word like perpetrator victim, right? But it's about the identity aspect of it. And in terms of an identity of victimhood, Christianity in particular, the J's too, I don't know exactly where Muslims fall on this,
They're getting served up to take that ticket, in my view.
But at least with specifically Christianity, the entire thing, at least in the churchian sense, revolves around the belief that the best guy is the one that sacrificed himself for the crowd. And it's the exact same messaging as my mask only works if you wear your mask, right? That we're doing it for each other. We're doing something we don't want to do so that everybody else can be okay. And that's why it's so easy, I think, for the churching crowd to accept all these other forms of victim consciousness as just a, their baseline existence, because the religion itself is telling them that their hero, their idol, their savior was the sacrificial offering. So like I call it the Messiah-op, and it's, it's in everything. And the Messiah-op is replete, whether it's in a Hollywood movie and the self-sacrificing hero and all that. But now I always just come back to the very obvious truth that if we all sacrifice ourselves for the collective, then the entire collective is sacrificed. So that's not going to work. It's not going to work. So we got to really change our context on what makes somebody heroic. And, I'm not saying that service to others is wrong, but you know, we've been fed this line about how being self-serving is the root of all evil and the cause of all these problems. And we're conflating the idea of authentic self-service or like self-love with the idea of greed, when the two things could hardly be further from the truth. Greed is whenever you take, you know, you take and take and take in a way that's self-harming and doing harm to others. But self-love is when you give, when you take care of yourself radically and first to make sure that your needs are met and you're doing what you have to do to self-sustain. So if everyone had the idea of, I got to make sure that I'm sustaining myself before I try to sustain anybody else, if that was the default, rather than everyone looking for the handout and looking to extend the handout to others themselves in a way that is making, like, depleting themselves, giving from an empty cup, if you will. If everybody was on the self-sufficiency tip, then no, we wouldn't even need to be giving each other handouts. The few odd cases of individuals who were having a hard time would be easily cared for. So we really got to like see through the all of the ways that ideas get conflated with each other that are really not the same idea, like greed and self-sufficiency somehow being, you know, somehow being connected when they couldn't be further from the truth. Greed is the last thing from self-sufficiency. Greed is like, give me, give me, give me, because you have to give it to me or I'm going to take it from you because I can't do it on my own. Right. It's anyway, it looks like Gabe wants to jump in. We haven't heard from you for a while, so I'm ready for some slick weaves, buddy.
Really quickly, can I quickly just nip to the toilet? Because I woke up so fast.
And yeah,
I,
man.
I had to tan like two cups of coffee. I really need to
nip away.
Thank you. Give me 2 seconds.
I think it's like it was like 7 or 8 a.m. for him when we started. He's in Malaysia right now.
Oh, wow. Wow. Oh, cool. That's super cool. I didn't know that. So I just want to point out service industry is a fun, easy, schizophrenic weave into savior in the story. And so the whole service industry is tapping into our hero worship. And another thing about the hero, I always want to point out, it is embedded into our language subliminally that to count backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0 is Twilight speak for fight for threat to one's hero. And so the hero that we associate with, that zero, the egg, the Neph, that primordial imaginatory egg noir, ints, the egg that you're always rinsing off to forget about, that is essentially the goal. It's the target. It's but it's so fascinating that it's hiding in our countdown for 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0 that we all did when we wanted to race. And the Greek word for race is theo. So then conspiracy theorist has three races in it. It has conspirace, racy, theo, raced. There are three races in the word conspiracy theorist. And so the word conspiracy theorist now becomes conspire becomes speak on. Conspire becomes speak on. Theo, race, race. Speak on, race, theo, race. And so there's something fascinating unpacking out of the phrase conspiracy theorist, but I want to give us all a pejorative on the word conspiracy theorist, just to like thicken our skin. This is a fun play on the word conspiracy theorist. You know, we don't, I never want to come across as a commissary theorist. We don't want to be commissary theorists. We don't want to sit around commiserating. And in fact, that's probably the deepest hazard of the culture, is that we just sit around bitching, right? So I just wanted to point out that these twilight aspects of our culture have been framed into a pejorative light a long time ago, and then they sink in, and then the victim mentality just gets fueled along the way. So yeah, I just wanted to pick up and hand off some of the fun weaves around that victim, because there's a global fragility initiative. They just launched the Global Fragility Initiative. And that word has been on our radar in our circle for a long time. Fragility has all the things to do with the Black Swan down there in Perth, where they first discovered the Black Swan. And that's also where the new sculptor meteor was born, in the birthplace of the Black Swan event. And now we have a Fragility Global Initiative popping off. So I just wanted to mention, fragility is actually intrinsically white. It's intrinsically white. And this is so fun because a good sculptor is also the best person in the city to do your teeth. The sculptor is the dentist. Socrates' father was a sculptor. He's extracting what is bad out of you. I'm speaking on crazy fun levels here. But I want to share something, Lord Bear, now that you're back, I want to share something. Have you ever heard the myth of Eros and Psyche?
No, I don't.
And how he was sent to charm her, but then he fell in love with her. And then it's almost like a reverse. Okay. It's kind of a reverse Romeo and Juliet. The way they come together is the opposite of how Romeo and Juliet die. That's really beautiful. I think you should think of that if you go into the myth. And also, I think Muhammad is embedded in this myth. And Eros was the subject of the symposium. Eros was the thing that the ring of sofas, the sovereigns, were sitting around talking about. What do you think love is? And they were getting everybody's different opinions on it. So love is actually anonymous. Love is the empty seat. Love is not in the room. It is the sixth position. There's nobody in that seat. So love is absent. Muhammad can never be portrayed in art. He has a mask. He has an anonymity, a perpetual anonymity. The forbidding idols. You're forbidding the image of him, and so he comports to the story of Eros, because Eros has intrinsic anonymity required in his relationship to Psyche. And what's beautiful is in the Enneagram, the sixth position is the root seat of the thinking groups. So Psyche's relationship to potentially some ghosty love interest who might be God, it's immortal. It's still happening today. And the element of the fact that Muhammad can never be portrayed is right in line with the fact that love can never be seen. So I just wanted to seed these ideas for you so you can kind of see where the Islamic faith might have a lot to agree with the Greeks.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, one thing I've wondered, and it's just a genuine question. It's not like a one that has a dagger coming through the side. I know a lot of people who like do Muslim Christian apologetics, which I just think is so tedious. I don't like it. But you know how Christians have the same thing where it's like no graven images. Why do you think the Muslims managed to stop that happening, but the Christians didn't? Like, you know, like, have you seen the thing where it's kind of like, because the whole point is to stop mockery and idol worship, and then you're like, the first image of Jesus was it Cesare Borgia, Da Vinci's sodomite lover? If that's true, I don't know.
I think the reason why is because there were already images of a crucified savior extant in Italy and throughout Europe. So
yeah,
you're already from the jump that it existed. So they had to like continue to manufacture that imagery to make it appear as if it was authentic to the Catholic hierarchy's, you know, game. But it already existed. I'm sure of that.
Have you ever seen the Bible verse where Jesus is asked about the end of times? And someone says, what shall we do in the hour? And Jesus says, you will find a man with, it's astrotheological. It's like you will
They'll
find
enter the city man. And there'll be a man with a pitcher of water.
That's
referring to, yeah, he's the fish, it's Pisces. And then the next age is Aquarius. And that's totally the age.
And that's going to happen, like, because I think Athens said it's going to happen like 750 years we move into that age. But do you think that's going to be like the
end of time? Jesus also said no man knows the hour. My point being that, you know, I've heard every different reason out there to believe that we either are in it or are not in it, or it's 100 years away or 700 years away. I actually think that we, like, based on, if I'm not mistaken, the way that the Roman court astrologers would gauge the equinox, that it had to do with what constellation was rising an hour before dawn when you could actually see it. By that metric, the age of Aquarius would have began around the same time that the United States became a country, which, when you look at the way that things changed and industrialization started to really pop off right after that, I personally think that that makes a lot of sense, that we've been in that age shift for a long time. But I honestly have no idea. And I don't believe anybody else has an idea either. It's like, depends on how you measure it, like what time.
Oh, I do. Oh, yeah. Slick knows the time, bro. Slick knows the time. Now, this is going to shake people because we're talking about shape. And shape is intrinsically frustrating because even the word, all of the iterations of the word shape is fucking with your dreams. It's fucking with your dreams. So the Malthusian mentality of a football, a baseball, a basketball, all of it is Malthusian because there's only one of them. And we have to agree and we have to abide by rules to even talk about this strange shape. This is Urania. This is geometry. She's holding a star globe. She has mastery over astronomy. I go over this all the time. And what's difficult, I don't know why this is true, but I think we can agree that the Hologium constellation tells what time it is, and it is not perceivable above a certain latitude of the realm. It's not perceivable. And so nobody knows the hour is telling you that the constellation that this word is sourced out of is the H-O-R. Wow. The H-O-R, the House of Representatives, this is the Hor, this is the Horlogium constellation. And it is hiding in the southern, we're going to call it hemisphere because I tiptoe through the tulips about the shape. It's hiding in the southern hemisphere. You can't see it. The things in the southern hemisphere, sorry about your feelings, you can't see them. They're inanimate, and that means that they're hiding in your subliminal. And they have corresponding counterparts in the northern hemisphere. And the hour's corresponding counterpart is the Pegasus constellation. I'm sorry. I get really excited about the fact that the southern whatever, those constellations, they are extra supercharged because we give them animation. We bring them to life. When we embed them into our language and our prophecies and our sacred books and our gospels, and they have extra purchase on our psyche that way. So, yeah, I get excited when I find out that, wait, am I the one who knows the hour? Is Gabriel going to tell you what time it is?
Are you saying that Horologium is like across the sky from Pegasus on the other side? Well, I have to pull out my... To pull out my
it's a north here. South difference. It's a north and south. Yeah.
Whoa. And,
I was, you know what? I just did a breakdown to my water guy today, and I told him all about Horlogium. total newbie to the whole thing, and I'm like, hey, buddy, let me tell you about this constellation that's at the foot of a river, the Jordan River, the Euridanus River, is literally feeding a water clock. The Horlogium constellation is a water clock. It's anatomically choice because it's literally being fueled gravitationally. There's the illusion that the Jordan River, Euridanus River, is running right between the Fornax constellation, which is a chemistry set that would need running water to make your chemistry set work. On the other side is a clock where you need to keep track of the time so you know how long to cook your chemicals in the alchemistry set.
Interesting too.
Anatomy and, the constellations.
Well, Horologium is like the beginning. The first star of it is in about the same distance, I guess, as Pisces. that's really weird. I want to talk a little more about astrotheology question, though, real quick in terms of like Islam. First of all, we didn't even bring up like any kind of breakdown, green language, Twilight speak of the name Muhammad. I think that that's definitely relevant. So it's clearly it's made of like two components, Moha or Maha and Mad or Mad. So the first word Maha is great. And then the second word could be Mad, could be like Madre, mother, Mater. So the great mother or the like the great goddess could be the namesake.
I think it's Mo Ahmed, A-H-M-E-D-D, Ahmed.
Oh, okay. So like the,
that's what I think
the sure H deserved, that yeah. H sound can sometimes like be softer or harder yeah. depending on who's pronouncing it. Mm-hmm. But then the word Mad could be Met as well. Like in philology, certain letters are interchangeable. D and T being that interchangeable. You know, we're speaking with very different accents in our English. So our vowels sound different. So vowels are interchangeable in philology. So that Mad could be Met, which is wisdom, like Metis. So Muhammad could be, you know, containing the words great wisdom or the great wise one, which I think probably fits a little more than great goddess. Also, in we already said that the Quran is in the chapter 43, verse 4, chapter 85, verse 22. Those are the specific verses are where it says that the Quran is written on a celestial tablet in heaven. The prophet himself was taught by Salman, which is basically Solomon, Salman al-Farsi, Solomon the Persian. Solomon is a huge giveaway to the old mystery school tradition. You see that name in a lot of places beyond just the King Solomon. And it's interesting that the Salman was a slave, like a slave magi, which basically puts him in the exact same category as Homer or Daniel from the book of Daniel, meaning that there is a longstanding practice historically of whenever you conquered a place, you would first of all take over their astrologers. Like you take them hostage, and you, after you take the astrologers hostage, you get them to rewrite or to write a history of the nation you just conquered that puts the conquerors in a longer term, like historical justification for owning that land. Yeah. So like, that's a longstanding practice. I think Homer actually means hostage in Greek. So the fact that Salman is the guy who taught Muhammad was a slave magi, that's a hostage astrologer, that's a fingerprint to astrotheology.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, right?
Jeez, I never thought about that at all. That's wild.
And then the last thing that I want to bring up, like from language's sake, is that if you just drop the vowels from Quran, the QRN, that's the exact same letters as KRN. So that's that word. In Hebrew, for example, it means horn or radiance, or it can mean corn. So it's like the horns that you see Moses depicted with. It's the KRN of Kronos. It's the mythos of the seed, like Adonis being a seed off of his mother Mira and then going into the underworld and then being reborn. So the fact that the Quran has QRN, which is the same as KRN, is a huge clue to it being part of like an extension or a later version of the same system that allegorically speaking all revolves around the mythos of the seed or the corn myth and Kronos and Adonis, who are the same guy. So I don't know enough about the Quran's contents to comment more than that at this time without like doing some research and digging in, but just that right there, the KRN, like our audience, longtime audience, is going to recognize that big time.
That's interesting because there's also, I can't remember, I'm paraphrasing, but off the top of my head, there's two or three verses in the Quran where it talks about the stars as well. And it always alludes to at the end, it's like, and for those who know the secrets of the sky, like use them. So it's always talking about that for those who understand the sky, and you're like, oh, really? And then what's interesting is, is the super secret, sneaky Pharisee stuff that came 300 years later, condemns astrology, it calls it shirk and just throws it under that blanket. I'm like, oh, like removing competition, are we here? Is that the deal?
The stars are where the scripture is at. The stars are the scripture. And then what gets written down in the recital or the Quran is just a translation of what someone read out of the stars. And that's what the story of Salman al-Farsi teaching Muhammad is actually about. He was teaching him how to read the stars so that he could be the messenger of God, because God is the whole sky in this system. Uranos is the same word in Greek. It's the name of the first god that gave birth to the other gods. And it's also a word that means sky, Uranos. So there's lots of versions of that too. Like that's in, I'll just leave it there, but that's part of the system too. And it makes sense because in a sense, like the sky is something that we can all see all of, you know, it's like bigger than us. It's transcendental. And for some reason, somehow, some way in a long ago, far away time, there was a determined that all of the rules about life and how nature works and the order that it operates was written up there. And it was a system was made to read that. And it's kind of like it ebbs and flows and people lose it and rediscover it. But there's an awesome book. I know you like to read, right? You should check out this book. Take note of this one. It's called The Celestial Code of Scripture. And it's by my friend John McHugh, who is an archaeoastronomer. There's quite a few good episodes with him on my channel too, if you look him up. But he traces this stuff back to like Mesopotamia, Babylon, and their system, because he's versed in cuneiform and those languages. So, you know, he's looking at the names of stars and constellations and their names in Babylonian or whatever, what have you, Assyrian, those languages. And he's able to like take the name of the constellation and of the stars in it and all of the like phonetic synonyms and homonyms and various word plays that could be derived out of those names and words. And he's literally able to reconstruct entire Bible verses, entire chapters of the Bible, miracle stories from the Bible and the Quran out of one section of the sky and just picking out all of the different words that exist in that one section of the sky based on what we've named those words. And it's like, you know, you'll read his book and it's undeniable. You know, like that is the scripture. That's the origin of the scripture. And I think it makes it more magical, not less, to realize that.
I don't understand this, because I'm actually going to ask you guys a question about this, because I'm shifting to a certain view of looking at the world. But I agree with you, where it's like, how is hurtling around in a death vacuum, and you're just like, God, I want an Audi TT that's like maybe got yellow calipers, and like that's just, it just sucks. And my view on it now is kind of erring to, if I'm being honest with you, again, like if something's true, it shouldn't fear investigation. So people who get triggered at me saying this, it's like, are you triggered at me or just triggered at yourself? And I'm kind of touching a wound on your skin that makes you angry. I don't know. But my view of the world is kind of moving now to a more sort of a deism view of everything. You know, like in I think the deistic view, well, at least from what I'm aware of, is the idea that, say, God's a clockmaker, and I'm like, well, the sky does seem to be like a massive fucking clock. Once he's made the clock, he doesn't really, there's a separation between the creator and the creation. And my view on things now is I'm like, so I always wondered, was like, God has a plan, yet, and this probably could work, and I'm just not smart enough to understand it. And I'm not saying that patronizingly, but it's like, God has a plan, but you want an Audi. Like, did he write that in his plan? I don't know. And my thinking is like, we already have everything we need here. Yeah, like, is God outside of the creation and really doesn't tend to enter, more just like an observer of it, not a spectator, but like the, I don't know. But my view of it now is kind of just like, okay, you were a lazy slob and you watched Netflix for a month and now you can't pay your rent. If you pray to God, will probably it will, like the Jerry Marzinski thing, like it'll change certain things around you. But my view on it now is it's more deistic in a way where it's like there is a separation and it's all about what you choose to do here. And everything is set up like a clock to aid you in whatever you want, be it good or bad. You see where I'm coming from?
You know, that question is, I don't have the answer to it other than I don't feel that there's any separation of creator and creation, which is very heretical. But going back to the original system, in my opinion, that appears to be part of it. And I find that through the language. Like, I have some notes on this. So I would like to actually pull those up so that I am getting all of the details correctly. But essentially, you know, they talk about a lot of times the God in or under the earth, right? You hear that phrase in the, like in pagan ideas. And also in Hebrew, the name Adam, they say Adam's name means earth. In Hebrew, that'd be Aleph Dalet Nun. No, Aleph Dalet Mem, ADM. They say it means earth or red earth. It's implied to mean dirt. But I think it might actually mean earth as in the entire world. The reason for that would be my favorite reason for that is that in Ethiopian, Adama means beautiful, elegant, or pleasant. And basically that means beauty that's derived out of order, right? So if we go back to words for the world, like cosmos of the ancient Greek, that means the exact same thing. Beauty derived from order. Or in Latin, the word mundi is world. The word mundus means elegant, clean, tidy, neat, adorned. So going to Sanskrit is another example. The first two human beings are Adin and Eva. Well, if you switch the vowels a little bit, Adin, which is obviously meant to be Adam, it's the same word as Eden. So there's another clue that Adam is Eden, the primordial world. More modern occultism calls it the Adam Kadmon, that the entire universe is a macrocosmic human body. Now, Saturn was called Adonis, the father of the gods. He was the son of heaven and earth. He became Adonis became Adam because the Greeks did not. Adam became Adon. Sorry. The Hebrew Adam became Adon, as in Adonis, because the Greeks didn't have words that terminated with M. I find that so interesting. And even Adam backwards is like meta. But I'm kind of going on and on. But the point is, you know, the more you look into it, the more you might come to the conclusion that the entire world is the deity, or at least is the first creation of the deity, as in Adam, and that's world soul or world spirit is what is referred to in the incarnations of various saviors. I mean, when you look at this stuff, you realize that all of the modern scientism is just based on, you know, like Einstein, for example, is just based on the old system. It shows up linguistically in examples like, you know, Einstein talks about space-time, right? As if they're like one thing. In Greek, the word space is choros, and it's the exact same as the word Horus phonetically, yep. Or hours, space and time, same word. So I personally see nothing heretical about considering myself to be like a cell in the body of the creator or the God, you know, just like my body, I create the cells in my body and it's just an aspect of what I am. And it just happens automatically. And they're all orchestrated. All of their behavior is orchestrated by my divine plan, as in my, you know, continued existence and life. And then the word Jehovah means life and existence. To me, that it makes more sense that the entirety of the universe is God, rather than that that it's the God is somehow outside of it. And you know, going to like Brahma and the egg, or Mithras and the egg, or Orpheus and the egg, the cosmic egg.
I never thought of that. That's
you know, I think that I think that it's just like this fractal wombs within wombs or eggs within eggs that goes up and down bodies within bodies within bodies, this like infinite recursion of eternal existence. I like that a lot better. Personally, it feels more right.
I agree.
PK
I
says it's pantheism.
Feeling. Yeah, I got that feeling. I took mushrooms like 2 months ago, and the first time I did it like three times, and I like not mega dosed on them, but like a big amount of them. And I remember the second time I did it, that was the prevailing feeling, because I don't do them to like to answer the club. Like I just take them and I sit and I think, right, and I just let the thing sort of overtake. But I remember the prevailing feeling I got was that, oh man, it's so trippy. Like, I don't know if it actually has any basis in what we're talking about. Yes, it does. It was the idea that you could magnify, you know, like the border paradox, where something will have a border of like 58 million miles, but then you zoom it in more and now it's 112, and you zoom it, like you can never actually figure out the border of a country because you can zoom in further and further and further and further, and you never actually hit where you can stop zooming in. And it's like everything can be magnified to a point of no end, and everything can be retracted to a point of no end, and it can all be summarized as one single point, and then you could have a million points around that, where it's like, yeah, like everything that could have, like I even had the thought when I was doing that, I was like, and this is why one of the favorite things I ever heard in my whole life was that it was just so simple, but it was what Topher said, and it was the number one commodity in all of human existence is attention. And whatever where attention goes, energy grows or flows. And I was thinking, like, when I was on the psilocybins, it was like, if an idea is in my head, it's there. Like, it's not like it's not in existence. Like, it is there. It's just not in the physical form. And it's like the whole purpose of the world around you is to, and as in my view, is to just impress upon you, is to get you suggestible, and is to get you to offload your authority, your ability to author your own world and to sort of idealize the world around you. And I was like, if you just, it just depends on what you water the most sort of manifests into physical form. Or it's like, don't do this at home, anyone, please, right? But I remember I was thinking, like, even things as subtle, and I know there is a form of reality here, it's not all just completely metaphysical, but like even your bank account, if you're just looking at your bank account and it says you're broke, all the world is, this is my view, don't follow what I'm saying, I'm like a baby compared to most people, but like all it's there to do is to tell you you're fucking poor, you're fucking poor, you're paid, faggot, you're poor. And it's like, well, you know, you have eyes that you can see without eyes, hear without ears, feel without skin, resonate without experience. It's like all the ideas and thoughts that come into your head, the reason that they seem just like thoughts is because you don't water them as much with your attention as you give to the outside world. And the outside world is just there to kind of make you feel shit. I'm not going off a complete tirade there, but that was the prevailing feeling when I was on the mussies, is that everything that could happen, everything that has happened just can manifest in physical reality. And you just have to give it your attention more than the opposition that's coming to you from the outside world. And everything can be magnified to a point that never ends. And everything can be expanded to a point that never ends. And it can all be summarized as one. And then that's where I get what you say. It's like, are we
everything
just a cell?
Is everything.
Yeah. That's what are I like we to just say. A cell of a massive God being? I don't know. I think that's far more interesting than the whole just like, look at the dead man die, give me money, or like, you know what I mean?
So what we're hinting at is why the word father in Latin, pater, is the same as the word pattern. Because regardless of what dimension of scale you're looking at a thing at, it's all got the same pattern. Things form, grow, and change in the same order. That's reflected in the seasons. That's reflected in our comprehension of astrology. Things have the toroidal shape or the egg shape. Gabe, Dylan noticed something the other day. We were talking about that, the ostrich egg thing in ancient Etruscan art. And he's like, dude, the analemma fits inside of an egg. The analemma fits inside of an egg. And you need it. He was getting real schizophrenic.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. The shape of it, it totally fits into A. It kind of wants to. This is not a good shape of it. Mine is kind of well fed. But yeah, it does have an egg bottom, doesn't it? It totally does anatomically. That's fun. Oh, here we go.
You're a little too blurry.
Too late.
Mm. Yeah, there's an analemma on the right.
This is my GOD.
Yeah, we see, can't make GOD? It out. This is gonna get your connection.
Sulfur. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, that's my salt, sulfur, mercury. Spells GOD.
Ooh.
And why I say that the father and the pattern are the thing is because what's the reality is the pattern itself. Not the transient forms that cyclically arise and fall, or the very large or the very small. It's the pattern itself is the true reality. And that's what I think is really interesting about getting yourself in alignment with how nature operates, which oddly enough, back to the, like to circle all the way back around to the question of morality, I actually don't think requires all of this mystical knowledge of the pattern itself and all of its mechanics. I think that there's something baked into the whole situation where if you are doing good for good's sake and following the built-in morality of the cosmos, then your behavior and actions, hell, even when you're not, your behavior and actions will line up to that pattern regardless. Like, I don't think that you have to go do a special ritual and, you know, all of the perfect correspondence is set up. But I do think that there is an aspect to it of that fulfills your belief to do those things. And it's it's a reverence for the pattern whenever you're doing those extracurricular aspects of correspondence or like trying to set yourself up in a ritualistic way. I'm not saying there's no value in it, but I think that just being good for good's sake tends to put you right in the same perpetual flow state of synchronicity that everything else is in, and things work out that way. Like, that's how you're being supported by good or by God. And you'll find that, like, when you're trying to do stuff that's not really meant for you or that you know in your heart is wrong or bad, you're always like bumping up into a wall. You're always getting stopped left and right. And there is something about that be like water path of least resistance that doesn't mean you're not putting forth effort or giving it your all. It means that you're paying attention to the signs and the signals within yourself and within your environment. Your deepest inner self knows when something's wrong for you. And regardless of how hard you think you're trying, you'll posture yourself in a way for failure until you realize like, oh, that's not my path. And whenever you start to see those failures or those blocks that come in externally as your director, as your direction, I think that that's where things get really interesting. Instead of you being a victim to what blocked you, you go, oh, thank you. I see what my path is supposed to be now. And I really like this, the concept. One concept I've heard from Islam that I do remember is, I don't know if I'm saying this word right, but niyya or niyya, something like that. It has to do with intention. Mm-hmm. It's a aspect of like before prayer, you state your intention in your heart before you do the prayer. And I like that idea a lot because the most mysterious aspect of being an individuated self and a consciousness in this world is figuring out what do I want? What do I really want? You know, that Islam, they say only God knows a man's intention, right? Something like that.
Only can judge.
Oh, can judge a man's intention. Yeah. Well, I may have misinterpreted that, but I think like, you know, in terms of our deepest intention, there is a mysteriousness to it that's part of that divine order, that divine plan, where you find who you really are or what you want in the world by going with the flow in that way, in a sense. Because when you really try to ask yourself what I want, other than sort of like material things or like sensory gratification things, which are temporary wants, the big what do I want is usually either unknown, or you realize, oh, it's just what nature always intended for me the entire time. I want to have a family. I want to perpetuate my existence. I want to teach, you know, I want to teach a child good for good sake. I want to share what I've learned while I was here. And so it's like that, what do I want always tends to boil down in the deepest sense to the basic biological functions and processes of life. Once you clear all the bullshit out of the way, you get what I mean?
No, I totally get you. And I actually did this personally. I noticed this quite early on, was that I think the main thing for me was and again, it's like you said, all these roadblocks you hit, if you take it from the victim mindset, it'll just keep quote unquote oppressing you more and more and more. And if you don't, you're like, right, listen, like again, like it's all biblical Quranic. It's like you were given dominion over the world. It wasn't given dominion over you. Like that's how it is. And I remember just the bombardment of music, where one minute I'd be listening to some, and you always had your emotions sort of baby because of your access to something as small as music. And then you get into the whole Allah says, and it is, God spoke the world into existence, universe, one word, like the luminaries look like little oscillating frequencies in the sky, like all that. But you would go one minute from sad music, and then that would, you know, input, conversion, output, you'd start coveting things that were of a sad ilk. And then you would listen to rap music or something. You start coveting cars and nonsense and nonsense. And I remember about 2021, I just stripped it back, and anything pathological, I kind of just fasted out of my existence. And you realize it's like the garbage that you think you want now, you don't want at all. A good analogy I'd make is that when you go into a fast, like a water fast, you start off and you're craving McDonald's. By the time you finish the fast 20 days later, McDonald's isn't the thing you want. It was just a spell. You know what I mean? So I totally agree with you. I think if there's people really young watching this, I think one of the best things you can do is get out of that pathological, that pathos logos, like the pathos state, where it's just driven by emotions and feelings, and but you don't know what you feel. It's kind of like with women, and I'm not a dating coach guy or whatever, but I just see the amount of garbage that's around the marriage thing today with people getting married, and it's like, oh, but what do women want? And I'm like, no, they don't even know what they want. That's the whole point. They're the negative pole. They want the, like, they're like the magnet, you're the electricity. They want the voltage to just not to be like, what is it? Do you want to go on a date? Like, you know,
I mean, you know, another way to put it that like comes from a more magic occultism perspective, but I really like, because it's possibly more palatable to people that would hear, like, you know, I get what you're saying, but a more palatable way potentially, or diplomatic way to put it, is the feminine is like the sacred center. So in terms of them not knowing what they want, they're kind of like, they're innately have this wholeness and completeness that they can, and they can hold that down. Whereas the masculine is like, we trek through the labyrinth, and like, we're out there figuring stuff out and feeling incomplete and having to go out on the hunt and bring it back home. So if you can create an environment for your woman where they feel that centered, you know, they're in the middle pole of everything, and you just orbit around them like that, and you go out in your labyrinth, and then you're bringing stuff back to them, then they feel like they feel their completeness or their wholeness more intrinsically, and they're not as you know, confused about that what do I want thing. It's the overly masculinized, you know, in the feminism thing, woman that gets confused like trying to go be the giant slayer or whatever. You get what I'm saying? Like, I think that they're the steady center, and they're like, yeah, they've already, they're meant to like just hold down the center, and then we go on that orbit around them.
100%. I agree with you. I think all these, like, it's just you know what the best thing I've learned recently, and it gets you out of this fear state again, where you're like, because even I think a lot of the fear and the quote unquote truther thing now is it's kind of controlled. And it's just about making victim consciousness when people figure out they've been lied to, and not a victor state of mind. is Satan isn't difficult to figure out. In my view, it's just they just invert what's real. Like, it's just a 180 inversion. And they've made things so simple, like getting married, so difficult. Now, and this is actually playing in the Muslim world now, where marriage, before Hollywood movies, it was the beginning of a relationship. It was the starting point to marry. And then you sprout from there. It was the strong base for the tall building to be built on. And now they've made marriage the end goal. With, you know, like in Hollywood movies, it will be, and their eyes met in a room, and he was a psychopath with a jaw. It's just like nonsense. And then after breaking up and cheating, and, you know, he kills your dad and all this stuff, then they get married. It's the end goal. It's just inversion. You see this with the marriage thing today. It's like in the Islamic world now, they're making marriage so unbelievably hard to attain because it's expensive. Just like they make it stupidly expensive, stupidly difficult. And then they wonder why what's called zina, fornication, or like adultery runs rampant now. It's like, it's just the inversion of everything. And it's not actually difficult when you just scrape it back to bare bones. You know what I mean? Like, I personally understand why, but I do kind of find the whole like, the modern idolization of a woman kind of, I get why it happens, but to me it is kind of tedious, where it's just like, they're like, oh, how do I get married? What should I do? It's like, don't care. Like, it's not about them. It's not. Like, it's about what you do, and then they want to jump on next to you and be like, ahead, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You see this, if you make it about them, that's like the most, ends up being the most repellent thing to them. They might think that that's what they want because they've been told that that's what they should want, is for the man to make it all about them. But, you know, it doesn't mean disregard or ignore or don't support or don't show love or be caring. It's just about, like, you know, you have to be rooted in your purpose. And that's what actually is the glue to the whole thing. You got to keep traversing that labyrinth. And I also like, you know, I never thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense for marriage to be kind of the beginning. That was, you know, as soon as it was humanly possible, I married my wife. From the point I knew her. And I know you got married pretty quick to your
wife. Yeah, I got married before even meeting my wife in person. Because you just do it. And it's like, but this is the thing. It's kind of like the whole no, I guess, sex till marriage, but it weeds out the trash, because you're never going to find a, like, a trashy 304, or a girl's never going to find a guy who's going to use them if you do that. And I've always thought that, because I know, like, he kind of went full Zion genocide guy in there, but Jordan Peterson before had a good study, which was that when couples move in together before getting married, once they get married, they have a higher chance of getting divorced. Because when you're just with a girl outside of being married and you're like being intimate and stuff, and I'm not virtue signaling here, like, it just is what it is. It's like you're subconsciously and subtly saying, like, if you scrape back all the feelings and how nice it is in your lymphatic system, you're just saying, I'll use you now, and if I find something better, I'll throw you to the curb and you'll be rendered like a whore. And the girl is saying to the guy, I'll keep you around now, but if I find someone better, I'll get rid of you. And you're just breeding resentment. And when you get married and you do your vows and, oh, man, till death do us part, you know the other person's talking shit because they would have done it before they got married. And it's like, when you look at the statistics on that, the highest success rate, and this is weird because I'm not really all for it, but I get why it happens. The highest success rates of marriage are arranged ones, where they get rid of the new for inverted love of feelings and Hollywood stuff, and that has the lowest divorce rate of all. But yeah, I that's what I think. And people think it's a crazy idea, and I don't see how it is at all. You start a slate as a man saying that before you've taken any pleasure from the woman, you're going to be with her, and before the woman's taken any resources or pleasure from the man, that she's going to be with him. And there's no resentment to kick off. And you know,
like, it takes out all the transactionality.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes it an actual real, like, spiritual commitment. I see what you're saying there. Yeah. I mean, also with all of my life conditioning, I would find it really hard to be in being an arranged marriage, but I also see the logic to it.
Not arranged, but just like what I did. Like, me, my wife messaged me, and again, like, I'm not like some dating coach guy, but it's just like,
Oh man, family fungi in the house. He says unexpressed expectation is premeditated resentment.
Yeah, exactly. That's 100% it. That's 100%.
We got to shout him out. James and Elise, they just had kiddo number three. Congratulations, nice. Guys. They've got themselves a girl. Really happy for them.
He's gone.
got so excited I clicked myself out of the room.
There he is.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up though, guys.
Dude, congratulations on baby number three.
Yeah, baby Adelaide.
Nice.
We got to wrap it up, guys. I want to give you all your closing thoughts. I know we could just kind of go on. We're having fun. I love how Mars and Aries this conversation has been. But let me give Gabe the floor first, and then we'll kick it over to you, Matthew.
All right. Yes, this has been a wonderful show. I'm very excited to have met you, Lord Bear. Big thanks, man. Great to have you on. So you mentioned attention earlier. This is my last note, is attention. And that hits a chord for my generation in particular. This might have missed you, youngsters. But, you know, we're all thick-skinned in the conspiracy realm about pejoratives. We're used to being called all kinds of fun things and even making up fun things to call ourselves, like we did tonight. Commissary theorists. When I was young, they had a vaccine that was a label that they would put on the gifted children. A governor that they would put on you as a label. ADD. And ADD wasn't hard enough. They had to go and put another letter in there. They had to put a plus on the end of your ADD. Oh, wait a second. They added another letter to my ADD, right? What's fascinating is this was setting my generation up to presume to be to blame for the deficit, for all of the disorder. We've been scripted to be the Pate Riots. We are the Pate Riots. We're the fathers who are supposed to set shit on fire. And when they called us attention deficit, they were putting it on our watch. This collapse has been scripted into our identity since we were the little children learning how these three-letter agencies use the power of association to add regulatory capture to your identity. And having ADD added to my identity and then being given a bunch of drugs and switching up the recipe, it's really fascinating. But it is. It's the pattern is happening again, because here again we have LGBT plus. Oh, and then I wake up one morning and it's plus LBZQ. Oh, and then you got to. Oh, wait, those kids need medical interventions. Those kids are going to need medical interventions. So it's just a repeat of my trauma, packed and enlarged. Uh-oh, I got zapped. Am I good?
You're good, buddy.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you. So I wanted to put forward with this attention deficit programming that was now a torch handed off to the LGBT children and the indigo generations to come. What I want to share is that I just learned that the word martyr is related to the word witness. The word martyr is related to the word witness. And here I am in my middle years, lavishing in your witness. I'm blessed to be seen by you right now. And that is a remedy for what they labeled me as being having a deficiency in. I was told I don't have enough attention. Well, now here we are looking at each other, having these amazing conversations across the world. How much more attention do I want? How much more attention could I ever ask for? And so the remedy for my own labels is inside of the social engineering. the answers are inside of the engineering right here for us all. So I just wanted to mention that the witness and the martyrdom in telling an entire generation that they don't have witness, they don't have attention, they don't have, nobody's paying attention to you. You don't have enough attention to get your grade right. Attention is the problem. And here the tension has built up today. And we're looking for martyrs. We're looking for witnesses. But what's beautiful is we got so much witness. We got so much witness. We got more witness than any generation has ever had. And I just want to thank everybody for seeing me tonight and for coming together to be each other's witness, be each other's martyr, to be each other's savior, to be each other's victim and each other's victor. Praise the Lord. Give thanks and praise.
Dude, you know what me and Jenny always say about you is that you are the absolute best witness we know. There's nobody that gives more authentic, hell yes, enthusiasm to whoever that he's looking at than you do, man. You are a golden witness. We love you, buddy. We're so glad that you're here tonight. We missed you the last couple of weeks. And I want to tag on to your ADD thing and just point out, too, that it's the same deal with addiction of all kinds, whatever the label is. It's addiction requires you to tack on a story to your identity that isn't true. And one of the best ways to kick an addiction is to stop identifying with that label or that story. You know, that's why I think that it's a little insidious about Alcoholics Anonymous that they always, like, 20 years later, they got to say, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Like, that's the, you know, they probably tend to just trade that addiction or story for another. But just, we got to keep that in mind that all of the self-destructive behavior is a type of addiction and a story added on that is an untrue story that isn't part of your original blueprint of existence. But yeah, I love what you're saying about witness, man. You are the golden witness, Gabriel. We love you, dude.
Love you, bud.
And yeah, let's kick over to Matthew and let him, you know, give whatever closing thoughts and plugs he might want to give.
I'll give you the closing thoughts on that. It's very interesting when you brought the addiction thing and the identity. So for my personal prerogative, since I sort of became, you know, you can have, it's like faith and works. I had the faith, I never had the works. And since I've started to implement the works for about a year, every single addiction I would have had is gone. Like every single one. The last one, which was the little naggy one, was like nicotine. Now, I was on these little nicotine pouches. They were like ridiculously soothing, I guess. But I got rid of them, not touched them in like a month and a half now. And then it's interesting because I do, you know, Jerry Marzinski and the Mace Energy stuff and all that. So I have a Mace practitioner who is the loveliest woman I've ever came across. She's one of those ones, kind of like, I'm not blowing smoke up anyone's back end, but like kind of like Slick, where you just have that sort of aura of like just like there's no, you know what I mean? Just like a very positive aura around you. She's kind of like that. And she had something interesting she said the other day, and it was the when we were doing it. It was, yes, 2 days ago. I'm on with her tonight. And so people are debating, is it the luminaries that are these negative sort of entities that is described with Jerry? Is it jinn, demons? And she was like, it's not what's binding to you or what's sticking to you I'm interested in. It's what is what they're attempting to stick to inside you that I'm interested in. So like these demonic forces, it's what's in you that they are pinging off of, that they are latching onto. And when you look at, there is, and I like Owen spoke about this because there's David Ewing Jr. who spoke about this as well, about Jesus existing allegedly in Europe and not in the Middle East. And then you're like, okay, the city of lights, Paris is built on all these catacombs. Why are all the apostles buried in France? And then you're like, Jesus, je suis, I am. And I'm in total concordance with what you're saying. It's these identities you create around yourself that again, is as without, so within. You create these identities internally, and it's like consent. It's like the Satan will call you, you answered his call. Do you want jurisdiction with your creator, which is infinite abundance and responsibility paralleled with your own authority and having no idols before him? Or do you want scarcity and fear and all this nonsense? And therefore you identify with fear, you identify with a degree of lacking an addiction, and then the Satan's just like, okay, consent, bing, because you've identified with this. You're Jesui, you're Jesus, you're I am. So I think it's all very gravy ladly. I just think to conclude, I think the victim mentality is probably going to be the thing that's pushed the most. And then outside of that, it's all truly written in the stars. And what a head for that is to come across, you know. I remember the first time I seen a star with a P900 camera, and I was like, that's not a burning hydrogen ball 15 trillion light years away. What are you? You know, when you see it like oscillating and you're like, oh, so like water's above water's below, and that sort of thing. So, so yeah, I think everything's great. I just thought that was an interesting little schizo take on it for me there with the whole addiction and then the je suis thing and all that. So,
I love how in like our generation, yeah, schizo has become no longer like a derogatory term. Yeah. It's like schizo take, you know. Slickso, schizo take, big time. Man, this has been a good conversation. I'll add on to what you said too about the whatever negative external forces may exist, they have to latch onto something inside of you. And and in my opinion, it's like you could look at it one of two ways, that there something outside of you gets in and latches on to a broken part of yourself that is susceptible to it, or from a biofield perspective, they're your consciousness and your life force energy are not separate things. It's the same thing. And so where there's fragmentation in your life force that is created by identity wounds, essentially, you know, beliefs about yourself that limit your total potential. Like, I am not that. I could never be that. We do it with even little things. Like, we see somebody that's good at guitar and you go, they're so good at guitar, I could never be that good. There's a self-limiting belief right there in the mix. But if they get severe enough, that the energy that you'd limit from your own potential reservoir is big enough, that it does, and it's separated in a compartmentalized way. It's really no different than a separate consciousness that is inside of you that is like hurt and unwhole, unhealed, right? And it contains the record of some traumatic experience that you had. And it's just like caught in a loop on repeat with that traumatic experience. So, you know, you could look at it as external demonic entities coming in, or you could look at it as fragments of yourself that have yet to be integrated. And in that sense, it's like, you know, you actually got to accept what you call the demonic. You got to accept the reality of what we perceive of as evil or as painful or hard. You got to realize that, and I really like that in the Quran, that Satan asked permission from God to rebel. You know, you gotta give thanks for your adversary. You gotta love your enemy, not love your enemy like let them hurt you, or love your enemy like you know, accept or not accept, but praise or condone, you know, the bad or harmful behavior. But I mean, love your enemy for the way that your enemy makes you a better sparring partner. By their existence, that their whole reason is that dynamic tension, that dynamic disequilibrium, that is what allows for growth and that electric cavitation, you know, the charge to jump from pole to pole, the spark of life, existence to exist. You know, it's all part of the mix. I'm loving it. So yeah, if you guys want to support the channel, you know, haven't seen any super chats tonight. Just saying. Wouldn't be a bad idea. Toss me a tip if you enjoy what we do here, or you can check out the description for a lot of different ways you can support. I recommend Tippecanoe Herbs. Kyle Denton is a champion. 10% off with the Interverse coupon code. Everything that you might buy from there is going to be quality, wildcrafted herbal medicine. Really good stuff. I'm sure there's a sweet Taurus package happening right now because he does these astro packages. Slick is spritzing himself. Let me get a little of my rose hydrosol. Yeah, it's good stuff, man. Check out Tippecanoe Herbs. And then there's, of course, tunings. I've got all of May is already booked out for tunings. So if you want to get one in June, cannot connect with me, chance@interversepodcast.com.
What is a tuning?
Oh, I'm a biofield tuning practitioner.
All right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Here we go. Here comes my bank account.
Oh, man, we'd have a good time. It's fun. It's like pattern recognition that also makes you feel stronger and gives you vitality back. So it's like a put a puzzle together. See the patterns in your life story a little more clearly. Mm. They're always great, man. Let me read this email. It's a short one that I got from a client just the other day. He says, man, I've been doing great. I can say that I had a constant feeling in my knee for the last 6 years. And I can honestly say that I haven't felt it at all since the tuning. My head has also been much clearer, and I've been dealing with situations with much more peace in my mind than before. And that was a dude who's actually your age, Matthew. So, you know, whatever your age, it's a good time to go review where you might have lost a little bit of juice along the way through experiences that caused you to do some self-limiting. And we got Machine with the super chat. Sky Davidson with the super chat. You guys are the best. Thank you so much. Like that makes makes it all worth it. Yeah, Joe Potter, better get a tune-up soon. Yeah, you want to get your summer bod ready to go. You know, it's going to be June by the time you get a tuning if you book now, because I'm only one man and I'm not an assembly line factory. I can't do it that way. I have to take it at the pace that allows me to be 100% stoked about every session, which means I can't do like a shitload of it. But they're all awesome. And thank you, Lord Bear, for hanging out with us.
Do you know, Chance, what would be, because I do have a little bit of a, like, you know, if someone was to come to me and be like, yo, you want to run a central bank? You know, like, I do have a little bit of like Jamie joking, but what would really be good, like you were saying about how it's a one man army at the moment, I think a lot of people are going to start chasing. So imagine you're like a doctor today, and as the revealing, the apocalypse occurs, and like my G Pluto just comes in, he's like, that's fake, you're lying. Like, imagine you're a doctor and your whole life you've just been prescribing like fentanyl the kids for like, because they're sad. They're going to end up being like, okay, I want to do the same thing, but in a better way. What you should do, because I've noticed this with the Mace thing. If I were you, if you know how to do this and you're saying this is one of my army, I would start a course educational thing to, I know it's not a licensed practice, I don't think, but to educate people on how to go and do this for other people. You know, like, it's like becoming a Mace practitioner, like the biofield, what was it called again?
Biofield tuning.
The tuning, if you made a system which teaches people, like a higher ticket one, obviously, because like this competition is a sin, John D. Rockefeller knows it inside out, right? But if you made one like that, you taught people how to do it, because I think a lot of people are going to want to change a career over to something like Mace or what Tomer's doing with the true sidereal readings and all that. If you also made a separate system that was higher ticket to teach people how to become a practitioner in that field, and say, I don't know how much you would charge for it, but it's your expertise, it would bring an extra revenue for you, and it would bring an extra skill set for everybody else. It would lower your stress of being a one-man army. It's a win-win for everybody, right?
Well, I like the idea that right now, it is actually more important to me that people learn to do it than it is for me to tune a bunch of people, right? Like, that's way more important for everybody to realize that they, like, it's your birthright to have the skill. That being said, Eileen McCusick does have courses on Biofield Tuning Store, but I also, you know, maybe we're not all the same, but I taught myself how to do it. So I do my best to teach like the anatomy of the biofield and the general gist of what it is. And I know at least a few people like Kyle Denton have picked up the forks and figured it out for themselves. So, you know, to a degree, I almost like that more, but I'm sure someday there'll be a course or a book or something. I might talk to Eileen about it first. I don't want to step on toes because she's sort of the guru.
You know what we can call it? you can call it tuning adjustment warriors. Or no, social adjustment warriors. That's it. We'll call them social adjustment warriors. I don't know if you've seen it, Chance, but there is a tuning fork in this picture. I know it's not clear to you. Yeah. There is a tuning fork. I swear there is.
This is the
social adjustment, social justice warrior.
You know, one thing that's different about my method than like the official Eileen McCusick Byfield Tuning Store method is that I incorporate tarot. I don't talk to the client about tarot during the session because it would waste time. But as an example, I found this spot in a client yesterday where basically there was some sort of like insatiable and irrational hunger for something. And then I drew a card on it and it was temperance, but flipped upside down. But my read on temperance was the machismo aspect of it. The macho man aspect of it, rather than like it's overindulgence, but in that regard. And what it ended up being, the client explained to me from that age, was that he got like hooked on bodybuilding in an unhealthy way. So what's fun about tuning for me and incorporating tarot is that I get to see like just a wider depth of what the symbolism contains in the cards beyond just like the basic interpretation that people hold. So I like, if people want a book that really has all of the possibilities or most of them well covered off, check out Michael Tesserion's book on tarot. I think it's Path of the Fool or something. Let me look it up just so people know. The book is Path of the Fool, Meanings of the Major and Minor Arcana. Path of the Fool, Michael Tesserion. It's an ebook. That is just a great companion to your tarot. It's got a way wider range of the possible meanings and it's just really well done. I love that one. But I got to get out of here, guys. It's time. let's all have a great night. Thanks for hanging. Love you guys. It's been a fun hang. You guys are the best. Thanks, Lord Bear.
Great club, y'all.